Good evening, everybody. How you guys doing this evening? It's the Tri-State Sports Talk coming to you live from beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut. I am Mike DePalma alongside my co-host back in studio, Danny Santarella. Danny, how you doing tonight, brother? You sound great. You sound super excited. We got Tony D out doing some slide stuff that I don't think I'm allowed to say on the air. But we do have the one and only Neil Lynch calling in from our Hoboken studio. He should be joining us literally any second. So breaking news as we're like pulling into the studio today. Trent Richardson traded to the Indianapolis Colts for a first round pick. Neil, are you with us? Did you hear about this trade?
Yeah, I just saw it when I was on the bus riding home. Pretty blockbuster, and it's like if you're a Browns fan, just go ahead and jump off the nearest bridge, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that, you know, when they got North Turner, everybody kept talking about, they're going to be, he's going to be a dynamic running back. Everybody in fantasy world was loving Trent Richardson. You couldn't be more high on a guy than Trent Richardson. And then, they traded for a first-round pick, which will probably wind up being somewhere in the teens, maybe early 20s. You just spent a third pick overall a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's mind-numbing. I don't know. Maybe just Trent got fed up with it, and he went to someone in the front office and said, I'm not going to play. You can put me on the field, but I'm just going to sit there. It's really a curious situation. And I think, if you're a Colts fan, though, it's got to be like Christmas morning. I mean, they have a legitimate shot to threaten, for the championship.
Well, that's the question. I mean, is this really a difference maker? They went out and got Matt Bradshaw to kind of be somewhat of a featured back for them. They still got Donald Brown. I mean, Trent Richardson had a nice rookie season. It was good and, came highly touted out of college. But is he a guy that really elevates the Colts? I haven't been impressed with the Colts thus far, and I wasn't high on him going into this season. I didn't pick him as a playoff team. I mean, Danny, what do you think? Does Trent Richardson make them a contender in the AFC, a weak AFC? Does it help them that much?
I don't know if it helps them that much.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know either. Well, let's start out with the New York Football Giants. Two games where they had two tough matchups to start. You go down to Dallas, where they've had a lot of success since the new stadium opened, but it's always tough to go down and open on the road like that. And then, a tough game, could have easily gone either way, and it doesn't go in the Giants' favor. And then they go and play Denver, which is a tough matchup. And so there's panic starting to set in Giants country. Are you one of those fans that's starting to panic at 0-2?
No, I mean, we've been here before. Like I said in my article, though, I mean, the schedule is not pretty at all, looking down the schedule. Everyone's like, well, the Panthers is a gimme. I don't know that necessarily the Panthers are a gimme. I mean, like I said last week, they gave the Seahawks all they could handle. And, the Bills are no slouchers this year. I think E.J. Manuel is going to put them in a really good position to win. I don't know about the playoffs. But the Panthers have played two pretty close, tight games that were very winnable. And, Giants are decimated. Their run game is atrocious. And if you want Eli Manning to throw the ball 50 times, he's going to make a mistake here or there. And I don't see it being the kind of situation where he can just pick them apart. I mean, I know that the Panthers are pretty banged up in the secondary. They're very limited. And so maybe they can take advantage of that. But, it'll be interesting to see how our defense responds to Cam Newton and the offensive weapons they have there. I think there was Kenyon Barner was supposed to possibly play. He hasn't been practicing, but just another thing to worry about for the Giants D.
Yeah, I'm not a guy who'd be panicked if I was a Giants fan either. I mean, they've got their issues. Clearly the thing to be worried about is their running game. But as we've seen with the Giants in the past, you remember their first Super Bowl run under Eli, under Spagnuolo, the defense looked awful in the first 2 weeks. And then week three, you know, they figured everything out and they put it together and they put like six sacks on Donovan McNabb on that primetime game. And it kind of turned the season around. So I think the Giants as an organization have proven that they could correct their faults mid-season and be able to do that. So as bad as their offensive line looks, I don't think all hope is lost there. As far as this game against the Panthers, I mean, going into, at least in the last week, I mean, I don't think a lot of guys, I mean, there seemed to be a lot of optimism with Giants fans, but I think deep down they thought they, you know, it'd be a tough game to win, but they think, they kept thinking, well, you know, then the schedule gets easy and we got three or four games that are very winnable. But yeah, this Panthers team, again, another team I wasn't very high on going into the season, but I mean, last I saw the spread was, you know, the Giants were getting a point. This is not an easy game to win, Neil.
No. And, you know, it bothers me and it's very worrisome because I don't, you know, 0-3, I don't know that they can ever really bounce back from that. But, you know, I've never been a proponent of winning in September. I think it's really critical to win in November and December. And so if they need to get all their bad mojo out of their system in September, you know, I don't mind it so much. But you also don't want to lose too much ground to the Eagles and the Cowboys of the world. Not too worried about the Redskins at this point because they look pretty brutal against the Packers on Sunday. But, you know, bringing back Jacobs when they could have brought back McGahee, I honestly think that McGahee could have probably given them more, but I think that they brought Jacobs back because he's more familiar with the system and that he could pick it up quicker. And apparently they really needed him on Sunday because he got a lot more carries than people expected.
Yeah, I know. It was a very weird split at the running back position. I mean, I know Coughlin is a hard-nosed guy and you know, doesn't like turnovers, but my God, I mean, Scott was on the field for 39 plays, and I think they said Wilson was on there for like 21. I mean, it was just the difference there was huge. And then, you know, Jacobs got in the game against the seventh carries for 4 yards. He knew he was going to stink, and then he did a little dance with Rue after that. But, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't be overly concerned about them as a whole because, like you said, they're 0-2, but they're one game back out of the lead, and there's not any team in that division that I think looks like world beaters, in my opinion. I mean, you look at the Eagles, they kind of look the most impressive, although they can't make the big stop when they need to on defense, and their offense tends to kind of sputter out towards the fourth quarter with that high-octane offense that they're running. But, you know, you can't be worried about the Washington Redskins at all, and then the Cowboys are the Cowboys. So I don't know why, you know, Giants fans or people in the media are overly panicked. I don't think it's a shock that they're 0-2 for the team they play.
No, it's not. I mean, you know, I'm despite how bad they've played and all the turnovers and how horrible Eli has played, those are two games that, you know, a lot of people might consider to be not winnable, but I see it from the perspective of, they're very winnable games. A play or two here or there, and they're in the game. I don't think they got so thoroughly outplayed and blown out of the water. You know, if they can put together four quarters and not turn over the ball, who knows where they are right now? I mean, maybe we're not talking about them going 0-3, but, you know, I think that, you know, it's, to me, I'm not in panic mode yet. I don't think a lot of Giants fans are because we've seen this before. But, you know, at the same time, if they go in, if they play Carolina and they lose, I think then, yeah, you got to definitely press the red button. You got to start looking around at how you can improve the team and make some moves.
Yeah, now what do you make of, you know, Eli Manning's struggles here? I mean, I know you're a big Eli guy. I mean, is it just, you know, typical Eli inconsistencies, or is there something more? Is the lack of a running game an impact there? You know, he's got the big playmakers, but it doesn't seem that they're really in sync. Is it possible that not having them throughout most of training camp is a big deal for their timing and all?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are pointing to that and using that as an excuse, but to me it's like they've been together for so long that how can they be out of sync after just, you know, missing 2 or 3 weeks? But, you know, I guess maybe that there is a lot more to be said there because, I mean, you could see on a bunch of routes that they just weren't on the same page. But, you know, I think maybe he's just pressing too hard. You know, and I feel like he doesn't have he's got a couple of new guys on the offensive line, and he can't rely on the running game. And we've seen what kind of success he can have when he's able to have play action, right? And without that play action, you have to rely on him a lot more. And I don't know that he's not Peyton in that respect, where you can just load 45 to 50 passes into the game plan and expect to come out with a better touchdown to interception ratio, you know. And so maybe he does place a lot of pressure on himself, and I think it's to his detriment sometimes. And you can see it coming through. There's a lot of frustration, a lot of forcing the ball. I mean, you can see he has guys open. If you watch the film, he's got Cruz on that one interception. He's got David Wilson underneath on another. So, you know, it's a matter of working out the kinks and getting into the flow of things and just, you know, making smarter choices. You know, I think that when you see him go on his epic playoff runs, or when he's, you know, playing with 2 minutes left and the game on the line, it just seems like he turns something on. And this is what's so frustrating about Eli. You wonder, where the hell is that switch? Why can't it be on for four quarters? Why does he need it to turn on with 2 minutes or less? And it's just mind-boggling to me. And it certainly makes the games more interesting to watch. But as long as they continue to have winning records, I guess I won't mind so much. But once they start losing and, you know, we start getting higher draft picks, I think that I'll start to get a little more bitter about it.
Yeah, no, I hear you, dude. What's your take so far on Myers through 2 weeks? You know, he fell down, he had a couple drops. They keep interchanging tight ends. Is that something you're worried about?
I mean, personally, I think Brandon Myers can be a serious weapon. And, you know, he got banged around a little bit in Sunday's game, and I think, you know, he's maybe not used to that style of play. I don't know. Maybe he's not used to being the primary target. But, you know, if you're a tight end in an offense with Eli at the helm, you got to expect the ball thrown your way. I mean, Eli was throwing the ball to Jake Ballard and Bear Pasco, two guys who are not the fleetest of foot and are fairly sure-handed, but are primarily known for their blocking skills. So, you know, it sucked to lose Bennett, but having Brandon Myers in lineup, you know, I think can only help the situation. So maybe it's a case of him getting used to Eli and vice versa. But this offense is just too damn potent to not win games for them. And I honestly think if they just eliminate the interceptions, like two of those were, one of those was a freak, you know, freak of nature type play. Like, no one expected that to happen. But you know, eliminate the fumbles, eliminate the interceptions, and you're in the ball game and you're poised to win. So I think it's, and they all pretty much know that. I mean, I've been listening to a lot of interviews throughout the week, and you can tell in their voices, they're like, they're not really that stressed. And, you know, it's just a matter of, I don't know. It's really just a weird, you know, it's something that, and, you know, obviously the everyone's minds are kind of in a different place now because Tom Coughlin's brother passed away this week. So, you know, Tom's going to be dealing with that loss. And I think that's going to affect the team. It can be a rallying cry, or it can really suck the wind out of them. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond.
Yeah, I mean, when you're a team like the Giants, you talk about their potent offense. You're a team like the Giants, and you invest so much money in wide receivers and your quarterback. There's only so much money that can go around. So, you know, you're going to have to – you can give a lot to one position, it's going to come off somewhere else. And, you know, they thought they could get away with a young, relatively cheap running back and Wilson still in his rookie contract. They thought they could just piece him together with the tight end and their line and all of that. But if their passing game doesn't carry them, that's where they put all their eggs. You know what I mean? They put it all into that passing game. So it's completely on Eli's shoulders right now.
Yeah, but, you know, part of the onus has to fall on Gilbride, too. I know I keep bringing him up, but I feel like you got to adapt. And, you know, you can't be gun-shy when it comes to using Wilson. And, you know, obviously Wilson's running differently now because he's so concerned about losing the ball. But, you know, to me, it's, you know, you got to get over that. You got to get past it. You got to analyze the film and say, hey, okay, here's what's going on. We have a guy who's having fumbling issues. I still think that bringing in Jacobs wasn't the worst thing ever. And, you know, you have Darrell Scott, who can be kind of a change of pace kind of guy. So they have, like, a small, medium, and a large. And I really think that if Wilson's going to make it in this league, you got to kind of throw him into the fire. And you got to say, hey, you either turn it around or you're going to be packing your bags. And, you know, that's what's so frustrating about this is, like, we're not in the inside Eli's helmet. We don't know what kind of, you know, strategy that Gilbride's pushing on him. Is it something that, you know, and you would think at this point that Eli would have the kind of autonomy to go out and do what Peyton does and call audibles or fake audibles and really, you know, react to the situation, whereas I think he kind of either goes with what he has or makes the audible and then doesn't adjust. And, of course, the smarter defenses can really take advantage of that. So, you know, that's been an issue with Eli for a while now where he gets kind of locked in on a guy, and you'd love to see him just kind of – whenever he just looks off or spans the field, he tends to find the open guy. And I think that, you know, it's really just placing too much pressure on himself, and he's just got to play loose.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll get to our picks a little bit later on, and you know, we'll get into the game a little bit more. But I'm not overly worried about where the Giants are right now. Having watched all of both of their games, there are times that I think the Giants are ultimately moving the ball up and down the field, and there's times when they're not. So, you know, and there's times their defense making stops, and there's times when they're put in bad positions. So I'm not overly worried about it. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back and transition over to some baseball. We'll try to say sports guys. We'll be right back.
Black is back, and only at Quiznos. It's the Black Angus on Rosemary Parmesan. Quality, thick sliced Black Angus steak topped with melted mozzarella and cheddar. Try it. You're going to like it. Quiznos. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. Toasty. How do you make a tasty sub? There's the Quiznos way, and there's Wrong Way.
Hello.
Quiznos uses meat sliced fresh daily. Wrong Way uses shingle-packed meats in a bag. Quiznos uses bread made especially for toasting. At Wrong Way. And now, fresh out of the Quiznos oven, is our new peppercorn parmesan turkey with bacon sub. Only $3.49 for a... What the? For a limited time only at Quiznos.
Hey, Danny, we're back, brother. We're going to get in some baseball. I'll let you handle the microphone a little bit more than you have been. You've been very quiet. It's very unlike you. Normally, you jumped in and told me I was an idiot, but I appreciate that. You're here. You're just listening to what me and Neil break down the New York Football Giants. But let's talk a little bit about the AL race. I mean, we gave our bold predictions a couple weeks ago about who was going to win the second wild card spot, not knowing that Texas would absolutely collapse. And now it's just an absolute dogfight here. I mean, you have Texas and Tampa Bay tied. You got Cleveland a half game behind with an unbelievable schedule. You have the Yankees who can't win a game. And you have the Orioles who you pick, having a little bit of difficulty themselves. So where do you stand? You still taking the Orioles, Danny, or what?
I'm not going to welch on my sit now. You know what I mean? I am going to stand by both of them. I'm not going to backpedal. I see it right now as too bad in a wild card. When I was discussing it, that I had no confidence in Cleveland or Kansas City. And then we're sitting here today in Cleveland, the game back. You know what I mean? And I remember seeing that last night. I think last night when I thought it was half game and the game still being left to be completed. But I'm standing with Baltimore. I don't have phenomenal reasoning for it. I just like the lineup. I have confidence to show all this, so I'm going to stick with them. With the caveat, which I said a couple weeks ago, I still feel like the Yankees could do it, but I don't want to believe that, so I'm going to stick with Baltimore.
Neil, where do you sit at this point? Who else is going to pan out? I mean, is Texas going to hang out, or are they going to have just an absolute collapse here?
I don't see Texas turning it around. It seems like they've pretty much mailed it in. I'd like personally, since we went to school in Baltimore and, you know, knowing how avid that fan base can get, I'd like to see them make a push. But at the same time, I mean, can we can we appreciate what's going on with Kansas City and Cleveland? You know, I mean, I'm always a big fan of the underdog, and you know, it seems like, you know, if I had to pick between the two, I think the Royals would be someone that I could really get behind. And so, you know, I'm kind of pulling for them.
The Indians have come out. I mean, Houston, White Sox, the Twins. I mean, they got teams. They could literally run the table. And a guy who, when he was, you know, forced away from the Red Sox, when he was forced out, he said on the show right then and there that I thought it was a bad move. I mean, the guy had late leadership, the World Series title that hasn't occurred there in, you know, 80 years. All of a sudden, they like put on them everything that he got to get them where they were. They just let him, you know, peter out. You know, what do you think of this job Tito Francona doing, Danny?
Well, I agree with you in the sense that it is easy to get behind the small market teams. I think it's always been that way. It's easy to get behind those two clubs in the Central. It's easy to get behind Tampa when they're good and when they made their World Series run against Philly and all that. It's great. I think the big thing when you look at Francona is, I'm going to take a little bit of a shot here at someone else, but it kind of shows what an awful manager Bobby Valentine is. Because you look at what Francona did there, it's phenomenal. Now Farrell takes over and you look at a club, you know, with a 9-game lead in the AL East and stuff. But I think Francona, for anybody in Boston that hated the guy or thought he was a bum of a manager or something like that, you're seeing what he's doing now with not the most talented team in the world. I don't think you can argue that they're that talented, unbelievably so, and they're right there. They're right there challenging the Tigers and everybody else for the wild card. And I think it's a great story, and I would have no problem with Cleveland. And it's a city that's had horrible history in sports water. And I easily root for them. I could. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I would have no problem with the Indians.
Yeah, no, I kind of think the Mets have set all those records for sellouts, and now they're not even selling out here for the run that they're making. We have a guest calling in, and I believe we have him on. And so I want to bring him on. I mean, we're going to talk about real baseball, you know, what it means to be a fan of the game, love the game. We're going to go out to the QT Lumber Hotline and bring on the one and only Mr. Cub, Mr. Ernie Banks. Mr. Banks, are you with us?
How about my Cubs, Dan?
Oh, my goodness.
How about my Cubs? Let me hear you all say something about my Cubs.
Is this for real right now?
Dan, how you doing, Dan?
I'm fantastic, honey. How are you?
What about my Cubs? Tell me about my Cubs.
Can we do something? I mean, is like 105 years not enough now? Can we make something happen?
No, it's not. It's not.
Nothing
100 years is not enough. We're just getting started out here, Dan.
More suffering? Is that what it is?
More suffering? No. We're just backing up for a running start, Dan.
I'd love to believe that, Ernie. I really would. I'm struggling these last few years since Pinella left. It's not easy. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get behind them and believe and look at Samardzija and the guys and Junior Lake. But, what are your feelings on the Cubs, Ernie? Do you watch them much?
Yes, I do. You know, this week I've been with the Cubs 60 years, Dan. 60 years.
Yeah.
So I know about the team, the ballpark, and the fans. They are very loyal, and they love the Cubs.
Yeah, Ernie, this is Mike DePalma, Dan's co-host here, and you're exactly right. I mean, to see a team like that who's had their struggles and have a fan base that doesn't, you know, waver at all is an amazing thing. And we're here in New York. We have two teams. I mean, the Mets, when they struggle, you can hear a pin drop in their stand. I'm a big Mets fan. And then you have the Yankees. You know, they have it down here where you think this year would be an exciting time to be a Yankee fan because even after all their injuries they've had, they're in this race. And you think that Yankee fans would be just, you know, fighting, you know, chomping at the bit to just get into the stadium and talk Yankee baseball. And all they want to do is complain about what's wrong with the team. And one of the topics we've talked about a lot, I think you could shed some unique insight on it, is with Derek Jeter. And, it's been a topic here in New York for the last couple of years and really what position on the field he's going to finish up his career. And, I've been of the opinion that a guy who's played his whole life at shortstop, it's not like you just snap your fingers, you go learn another position. I mean, you're extremely comfortable playing a position your whole life. I don't care what kind of athlete you are. You go play another position, you're going to feel uncomfortable. And when's the last time Derek Jeter felt uncomfortable on a baseball diamond? He's probably 4 years old. And you're in a unique position to actually comment on this exact transition, having been a guy who came up as a shortstop, battled some injuries and moved over to first base. So talk a little bit about that transition and whether you think it's the time is now for Derek Jeter to start considering that.
Derek Jeter is a tremendous player, a nice person, and he can play the game. It's not over for him yet. He still can do it. He's a clutch player, a clutch defender, a clutch base runner, and he can do it all. He is a remarkable young man. I think so much of him, and he is not over yet.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, look at what he did, a season ago before these injuries. He was still one of the better defensive shortstops in the American League, clearly one of the most productive offensive shortstops in the American League. And, I heard a stat that I think Honus Wagner and Omar Vizquel were the only two everyday shortstops over the age of 40. And so Jeter's trying to be that third. And, I'm not a Yankee fan, but if I'm a Yankee fan, I think you let this guy play shortstop until he can't play baseball anymore. And to ask
what is it? You a Cub fan?
I'm a Mets fan, Ernie, so we're in a different ballgame. In the 80s, we weren't too big a fan of the old Cubbies.
Have you ever seen Sterling Castro play shortstop?
Oh, yeah.
He can play shortstop.
I hear from Dan every day of the week. I can't get him to shut up about Sterling Castro.
He's a remarkable player and a real nice guy. He's from Dominican Republic. And he is a remarkable
player. In the clubhouse and talk with the kids, the young players, stuff like that.
Say what now?
Do you get an opportunity to head down into the clubhouse very often and talk with the young players and the playing the big leagues for the young guys?
Yeah, Derek Jeter is a tremendous player. He really is. And we're playing Milwaukee tonight. And you all just watch him playing Milwaukee tonight at Milwaukee.
Yeah, that's a big series. Nobody's really going anywhere there, but there's a couple of rivals.
Yeah, it is a great rivalry between the Milwaukee Brewers and the Cubs. You're right about that. It's a great rivalry. Two wonderful teams. They're not doing well at the moment, but they really have some good young players.
Absolutely. We don't want the Brewers to do too well, though. We want the Cubs to be better than them.
No, they're not. We're better. We're a better team. We got some very fine young baseball players. We got a great leader. We got some good coaches. So we're going to turn this thing around so you all can tell all your fans in the East that the Cubs are coming.
Well, you got your biggest cheerleader sitting next to me in the studio here. It's all I hear about the Cubs, and we like to have some fun at the expense, but as a Mets fan, what am I going to say?
Yeah, I didn't hear you too well, but repeat that again.
I said, what I said was, we hear from Dan day in and day out about the Cubs, and we give him a lot of guff for it, but I'm a Mets fan, so what am I going to say about it, you know what I mean?
Dan is a great guy. You all should put a statue here right out in front of that station. Dan is a remarkable person because he grew up with the Cubs.
And there's not a lot of Cubby fans up here in Connecticut.
Yes, it is. It's a lot. I can take a survey and done a survey of people in Connecticut that are Cub fans. A lot of Cub fans are there. And when we come and play the Mets, it's a lot of them out there. And next year, we're going to play the Yankees here in Wrigley Field. We're going to play them in Yankee Stadium next year now.
Yeah, that'll be a big series. Ernie, a quick question for you. A few years ago, your fellow Hall of Famer, Bob Feller, had made a comment that the PED players, the players tied to steroids and things like that, in his words, were not welcome in Cooperstown. I don't think he spoke for everyone. I was just curious to get your opinion on how you feel about anyone currently who might be tied to those things and is up for a Hall of Fame consideration.
Well, what I'm saying now, I'm saying this in love to all of your fans. I really love all the players. I think they are tremendous people. They are very talented athletes. They give a lot to fans and kids and friends all in their own area. And I think a lot of the players, I think all of them should be in Baseball Hall of Fame, including my friend Pete Rose.
I absolutely agree with you on that, Ernie. I've always felt that Rose belongs in there, especially nowadays when you look at guys that have a cloud maybe hanging over their heads because of, you know, illegal substances they may or may not have used. I think now more than ever, in my opinion, and I think you agree with me on that, is now is more than ever the time to consider Pete Rose or to remove the lifetime ban. I mean, do you agree with that, Ernie?
Yes, I do. I sure do. I agree with you. I know Pete Rose. He's a wonderful guy, was a tremendous player. I played against him, played with him in All-Star games, and was elected to the All-Century team with him. He is a remarkable athlete, a great player. He understands the game, and he could play it.
Now, one more. This is Mike DePalma again. I mean, one more question. I mean, you were honored. It was probably one of the biggest honors an American could have, and that was, you know, Barack Obama gives you the Freedom Award, the Medal of Freedom Award back in November. Talk a little
Can
bit about
you all
that.
Believe that?
I'm excited for you. Talk about when you heard the news. How did that come about? Was that a phone call? Were you called into the White House? I mean, walk us through that whole process, Ernie.
Okay, really. It was a young lady. A young lady that called me, she's from Chicago, Melanie Hobson, she's a wonderful lady. She called me, and she mentioned on the phone that, Ernie, you have been named to win the Medal of Freedom Award, and I was just overwhelmed by it, just overwhelmed, and it was just really, really wonderful. I'm looking forward to getting there November the 20th. And being with the president and accepting this great award. It's a wonderful honor.
It really is, Ernie. So congratulations, and you earned it. I mean, you're a guy who loves this game of baseball. You're, you know, an icon in Chicago and throughout the country, and you deserve it. And so, you know, as a baseball fan, and, you know, Danny and I are in our 30s. We never got a chance to see you play. But the idea that your legacy is has endured for decades as it has, and you hear our parents and aunts and uncles and older fans talk about you like that, it's got to be something you're really proud of, Ernie.
Yes, I am. I'm very, very proud of it. I mean, it's just a wonderful honor. I'm very proud of it. I didn't think I did anything to receive this wonderful award, but the president and all of his staff felt that I deserve it, along with Oprah Winfrey and Bill Clinton. They're the ones that are going to be there with me when I receive this wonderful, wonderful honor.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be up there with a former president, a two-term president, and Oprah Winfrey. That's a huge honor. Getting back to baseball quickly, you know, here in New York, for whatever reason, you got a guy like Robinson Cano, who I think is one of the best talents in the game of baseball right now, but he hasn't really earn the love of Yankee fans for whatever reason, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that they don't think he hustles. They think he dogs it on, you know, routine ground balls. And last night, all you heard on the radio was about him not scoring on a ball he should have scored on because he wasn't hustling. And, you know, I having not obviously seen baseball during the golden age in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and all of that, everybody likes to remember it as a group of guys who hustled at every play. Now, you played in that era. Can you just clear the air on that? I mean, hasn't dogging routine ground balls been part of baseball forever, or am I wrong? Is it something where
up and down the lineup, everybody hustled out every play. I can't imagine Babe Ruth was hustling out routine ground balls at shortstop.
Yeah, it's been that way for a long time. And since I've been involved in the game, it's been that way a long time. But Robinson Cano, he is a remarkable player. He's a very, very sensitive player. He's from Puerto Rico and a really, really nice person. I have not met him, but I've seen him play and the things he does on the field. He makes good plays. He plays the game like it's just routine for him. It's really easy for him. And I really like him a lot.
Ernie, this is Dan again. I have one more question for you, bud. And it's for a long time I felt that guys like yourself and your teammates, Billy Williams, Ron Santo, Ferguson Jenkins, kind of get like undersold almost. You guys just don't get mentioned. I don't know if it's because, you know, some of the futility Cubs teams have had, but it seems like guys like Ted Williams and Carly Yastrzemski get their mention. Why do you think it is that guys like yourself, Williams with his 400 homers, Santo should have been in the Hall of Fame 20 years ago, Ferguson Jenkins doesn't get mentioned as a great right-handed pitcher. Why do you think that is? You guys don't get your just due.
You're right about all of that. You're exactly right about it. Those guys, and I played with them, and Leo DeRocher, as all of you know, he managed there in New York. They were remarkable people to play with. I enjoyed being with them, been around them. I learned so much from Billy Williams. I learned so much about life and how to play the game. They were really wonderful. And the sad thing about it, for all of us, and we still haven't got it out of mind, well, you know what happened in 69, don't you?
Yes, sir.
What happened?
9-game lead in August.
That's right. Go ahead.
Yep.
9-game lead. We came into New York and met Shea Stadium, and they put out a what? What happened, Kane? A black cat?
Yeah, yep.
You remember that?
I do. Didn't it run right by Santo on the on-deck circle?
Yes, sir. You know everything.
Not quite.
Wow.
I remember that image.
And you know Leo DeRocher was very superstitious. You know that, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
So he just, I mean, it was just unbelievable for him to see that black cat out on the field walking by the dugout. And Ronnie Santo looked at it, and he was said, wow. And after the game, I was talking to him. I dressed right beside him in the locker room, and he was said, I don't know why that happened. I said, Ronnie, this is New York. Things happen.
Yeah.
So, it was very, 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 very tight and a very unhappy time for us to lose those games to the New York Mets. And Tom Seaver was there. Tom Seaver was a great pitcher, as you know. And Jerry Kuzman, they had a lot of great pitchers, a lot. And Gil Hodges, you ever heard of him?
Oh, absolutely.
And he was the manager. And they went on to beat us, and it was a sad time in Chicago when the Mets beat us out that year.
Absolutely. And I know, Ernie, that a lot of Cubs fans lament 69 and 84. But I agree with you that I have to believe in Theo Epstein. I have to believe that things are getting turned on in the right direction. You're one of the all-time greats, and I know I speak for everybody here with the Tri-State Sports guys. I appreciate you taking the time.
You know Theo Epstein?
Yeah.
Do you know him?
Not personally, no, but I believe that what he did in Boston could be repeated at in Wrigleyville.
That's right. He's a wonderful guy. He's a very, very bright guy. I met him. I talked to him. He understands the game. He understands the players. He understands the future of the game. He's a very, very bright young man. He went to Yale University, and he understands everything about the game. I enjoy talking to him and being around him.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Listen, Ernie, one final question, because as a Cubs fan, I would feel remiss if I didn't mention this. But the 2003 Steve Bartman play, left field line, Moisés Alou, a lot of people crucified that guy for that, and I can honestly sit here and say I was not one of them. I felt like you didn't need to give up 500 more hits that inning and blow up the way they did, and Gonzalez is there. What were your thoughts on that? Did you think Chicago fans were a little bit out of line, or did you think maybe Bartman really, really had something to do with that?
Well, he had a lot to do with it. You know, Lou admitted that he could have caught the ball, and I was there with my friend Billy Williams, and we were, you know, naturally pulling for the team and all of that. So this is the year that we're going to be in the World Series. And that happened, and it just, you know, just destroyed everybody. And the whole city was just totally disgusted about what had happened in that particular game. And Bartman is still around, and we haven't seen him. I'd like for him to come out and throw out the first ball at an opening game at Wrigley Field, me personally.
Yeah, you know, I see a connection there with like a guy like Buckner, how after the Red Sox finally won, they brought him back and they honored him. And I know he was a little bit better ball player than Steve Bartman, but I think maybe someday, and I know you hold on hope like I do, the Cubbies will raise that banner. And that'll be a great day for all of us, you know what I mean? But we really do appreciate your time, Ernie. You're one of the all-time best. Taking your time for guys like us, we really appreciate it, man.
Thank you very much, and you all take care, and don't forget my Cubs.
That's right. You call in any time, Ernie, with any thoughts you have on anything, man. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
That's a great Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks, joining us on the Tri-State Sports Guys, Dan. You sounded a little surprised to hear it when you thought it was a prank call.
The rest of my life.
For Ernie Banks to drop in, and I knew about it. You didn't know about it.
No.
And for him to call in here,
yeah,
you handled yourself well. We had some technical difficulties. We're without a producer tonight. And so we had some mic issues early on, which I regret, but I think we straightened it out for again in an interview, and hopefully it worked out all right. But, I mean, I could talk to that guy for 15 hours if we left. I mean, and I think he would have.
Well, I think the important thing is you and I think we know baseball.
Yeah.
That guy actually does, and he's got 512 homers to prove it. And how many guys can we get on here that have 500 homers?
He's our first.
Absolutely.
He might be our last.
Yeah. You know, Robinson, if he's out there listening, we'd be glad to have him.
Yeah, that's fantastic. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We got some other callers calling in. We'll be right back in about 45 seconds with the Tri-State Sports Guys. The Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live from beautiful Norwalk, Connecticut. Number to call if you do want to call in and chat is 347-637-2306. We got a couple of callers on hold. We're going to go out to line two. I believe it's Maddie from Norwalk. Scully, you with us, buddy?
I'm here, guys. How are you?
I'm doing well. What'd you think? Ernie Banks calling
all
in
right,
the Tri-State Sports Guys.
Yeah, and I mean, there was a couple small technical difficulties that got completely erased by the interview. The interview was great. It really was. I think that's an interview that if you're a Chicago Cubs fan in Chicago, that you would absolutely take a lot from, especially when he says that he wants Bartman to throw out the first pitch. Because I don't know if you guys remember or not that when Bartman made his apology, and it was his only apology, he actually mentioned Ernie Banks' name.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I thought it was a great interview. The dialogue between him and Dan at the end, I could have listened to that for another 3 hours. It was great. It was two Cubs fans talking, commiserating. One's being completely positive, and he's excited. The only thing that I ask is outside the Tri-State Sports Guy Studios, let's not build a statue of Dan Santarelli.
That's going to happen, man. It's going to happen. All right. Well, Matt, thanks for calling. We have our next guest on the line.
All right, take care,
calling in to the Tucci Lumber Hotline. You know, there was a kind of a viral documentary that went around on Facebook. It went everywhere. It was produced through DailyMotion.com, and it was about Action Park in New Jersey. I remember this place, and not the place that I went, but being here, there was ads, and I'm sure you saw the ads going up for Action Park. Well, it was just an amazing documentary that was made, and it was a short thing. You could watch it. We're going to post it on our website. And one of the folks who was involved in that and is featured in that and is interviewed is on the line with us. We got Seth Porches from the movie about Action Park. You're on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Are you with us there?
Yeah, hi. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you? So, I mean, let's just get right to it. I mean, it was one of those things when you click on it, everybody posts it on Facebook in two parts, and you see the first part. And you're just enthralled. You have to watch the whole thing. I mean, and you're involved in this Action Park documentary. I mean, was all of this stuff real? Was this place really that insane? Is 15-year-old kids walking around cracking beers and there's a loop-de-loop water slide? Talk a little bit about this place.
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't just 16-year-olds. It was 14 and 15-year-olds also. Action Park is one of those places that, you know, it closed down almost 20 years ago. And the legend has just grown over the years. And your instinct whenever something like that occurs is to assume that all these rumors you hear are just that. They're rumors. They're urban legends. They're the sort of, you know, fantastical stories that snowball over time and, you know, have a nice sprinkling of nostalgia mixed in there. So when we made this movie, and I teamed up with some of the guys over at Daily Motion there, and, you know, we had a really good time doing this, I might say, really our goal was to kind of penetrate that fog of time and sort of figure out what was actually real and what was merely the result of legend building. And the biggest surprise of all is that just about – actually, I'm not going to say just about. I'm going to say every single rumor we heard that we looked into, we were able to confirm, at least to some degree. And that was what was so surprising about the whole thing.
Hey, Seth, this is Neil Lynch, Tri-State Sports Guys co-host. Thanks for coming on with us. I just wanted to get your take on, you know, what is it about Action Park that, you know, really, I mean, everyone I've talked to, every time I mention the words Action Park, you see people's eyes light up. It's an unreal phenomenon, something that I'm not used to. And, I mean, you can mention other amusement parks to other adults, and you just don't get the same kind of reaction. So, you know, is there one particular aspect of Action Park that sticks out to people, or is it just the fact that it is just that insane overall?
Well, you got to understand, for one thing, you know, the fact that Action Park is so memorable is extraordinary simply because this is a, for the most part, a really small, primarily a water park in the boondocks, and people in the area will, you know, resent me for saying this, but, you know, really off the beaten path in northern New Jersey, and it kind of sprung up, and you can sort of see when you approach the town, it's not a major highway. It's like a small road that brings you there. It's not Disney World. It's not Universal Studios. This was a regional water park, that primarily was intended to cater to the local community that was so insane that it became world famous. And the reason it's, you know, the reason people's eyes light up, and if you're going to really go down to it, it's because today everything is safe. It's rubber-coated. It's insured. And Action Park, what it does is it represents the people, this time in which it was sort of the last thralls of this era, really. And it was sort of this era in a nutshell when there was a sense of danger. There was a sense of uncertainty. There was a sense of adventure. And sure, you may not come out the other side of that slide alive, but you'll remember that experience. And that's more than anything else what people say is they say, I miss doing something that the outcome was unsure, the outcome was uncertain. And that's what Action Park represents to people.
Now, do you have a personal story from Action Park that you'd like to share? It sounds like you do.
Well, sure. You know, my stories aren't as crazy as some other people's. I went there a couple times as a kid, and just like everybody who went there, it stuck with me. Just the sense of chaos around you, the fact that there were 14-year-old, 15-year-old, 16-year-old kids. Like, you know, I was 9 years old. These kids looked as old as me, drunk, having stoned, drinking beer, and operating rides that looked like death traps and sometimes were death traps. It was, and then you get there, and, you know, you go to amusement parks, you go to water parks especially, any ride that's at one water park is at a dozen water parks. There are these assembly line, replicable, off-the-shelf rides. The rides at Action Park were these weird, one-of-a-kind monstrosities that made you shake your head and wonder what the hell was going on. And so one of the things we were trying to figure out is, where did the people who ran this park find these rides and the people who made them? And what we found out, and this is something that I'd heard rumors of, but we absolutely were confirmed, was that the people who made these rides, they weren't exactly people who were well-versed in engineering, physics, ride design. They, you know, what happened was the park had earned a well-earned reputation as being a little bit extreme, a little bit on the fringes, a little bit experimental, a little bit open to new ideas. And so people on the fringes of the ride design community, the ride design world, would track down the park and present them with their crazy ideas, and they would just say, sure, let's build this. Never mind anything about whether or not it would be physically possible. We'll build it and then check that later. And so you had slides like this looping water slide, which, you know, and the idea of a looping water slide isn't that crazy. Some places in other parts of the world have actually done it right. What's crazy about this looping water slide is the fact that the loop is one that does not look possible to complete. It's a perfect circle. If you ever ride a loop in a roller coaster, it's never a perfect circle because the G-forces are so intense it could break your back. You have corkscrews and you have teardrops. This one looks like it was made by somebody who really had no understanding of physics whatsoever. They just built it and then they tested it later. And that sort of panned out in the fact that really the ride stood there for years, was only open to the public for a couple weeks. They spent years testing this thing out. Another rumor we had confirmed was that employees were paid $100 bills to go down this thing to test it out. And from what we heard, it was quite the painful experience too.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounds like it's the wild, wild west, and it's somehow in the Northeast. And, you know, I think that's what, you know, people miss, and that there was, you know, we live in a society and a, you know, a world today where everything's kind of covered in bubble wrap. And I think that's another reason why people are so drawn to something like this, is because there's just such reckless abandon, you know, and it kind of fits in with that 80s mentality that was prevalent during that time. So, I mean, do you think that we can ever recapture something like that in the near future, or are we just totally screwed?
Well, I think, you know, there's opportunity. I would say, you know, people in the 80s are probably the ones who are screwed because they died. But still, you know, I do, you know, we all miss the sense of fun, of course. I think that there's a way to sort of enjoy the spirit of Action Park with some basic common sense safety. Like, you can have extreme rides and you can have crazy rides. You can have rides that don't make too much sense, but you got to be sober when you operate them. And you got to be older and 14 years old when you operate them. And you have to have inspections. You have to make sure that, especially if this ride is crazy, that, you know, the people aren't asleep at the wheel. And actually, if you go to the park today, so the park closed down in 1996, but it reopened under a different name called Mountain Creek. And it was, what happened was, it was purchased by a large resort chain. They took out a lot of the crazier rides, such as Looping Water Slide. But then just a couple of years ago, the original owners of the park repurchased the property. And they've been kind of slowly reaction parkifying the property, if that makes any sense. They've been trying to, you know, there's a couple of the old rides that are still there. They're sort of grandfathered in. There's some rides that are, you know, pretty intense as far as water rides go, kind of things you probably wouldn't find at any new water park, like the cliff diving, which is a 25-foot cliff you dive off of. That's a ride somehow. That's still there. But they've been trying to sort of bring back the sense of adventure and the sense of fun, you know, while paying extraordinary attention to safety. And I think, you know, I really keep an eye on what the park is doing today, the park formerly known as Action Park, now known as Mountain Creek Water Park, because I think if anybody can pull it off, it's these guys, honestly.
Yeah, and I mean, well, the other thing that's kind of, not in their favor is the popularity of video games and the advancement of consoles and the way that we entertain ourselves these days. I mean, just this week, Grand Theft Auto 5 released, and it's, I think, the highest-selling video game of all time, $800 million in sales. People can't stop talking about it. And it gives you that real-life experience where it's almost like a virtual world, a very open-world environment. You can, you know, I've heard crazy things about, you know, in-game you can play cards or you can play golf or you can do all these other activities that are typically just reserved for real life. So, you know, what does an amusement park like Action Park or others have to do to get back that interest in getting out there and enjoying yourself?
You know, that's a great question. I think, you know, from personal experience, I've been talking to the youth these days, as you might say. I think that, you know, kids are so inundated with screens and with technology and with gadgets. And I'm a technology writer. That's what I do for a living. I know all about this stuff. I love technology. But I think the more immersed you are in technology, the more you yearn to do something real. And so, you know, some of the people I know who are really involved in, like, the DIY or the maker movement or collect classic anything, those are the people who spend the most time with technology, because the more time you spend with these fleeting, disposable virtual moments, I think it really builds up this natural, innate, undeniable demand for getting out there, for being with real human beings. I really don't view it, you know, sure, you know, when you buy Grand Theft Auto V, some kids might lock themselves in a room for a week and play through it, but a month later, they'll be out again looking for something else to do. And water parks are a standby. They've been around for decades, and I think wherever there's something fun and slightly dangerous, you'll find teenagers there.
Yeah, unless you have like overbearing parents like I did that keep you under lock and key, then it's a whole different ball game. But I want to thank you, Seth, for coming on. I really appreciate it. Anyone who wants to follow Seth on Twitter is at Seth Porges. That's SethPorges. You can check out the two-part documentary series, The Most Insane Amusement Park Ever, on TriStateSportsGuys.com. We embedded it earlier today. You can check them out there. You can go to DailyMotion.com and check it out there. I think that's about it. Thanks for joining us, Seth, and we'll hopefully talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so we're going to move along with the show now, and I don't know, Mike, what do you think? I mean, you've been to a fair amount of amusement parks in your day, I hope. I think everyone has. If you're a child of the 80s, you never got to go to Action Park, I assume, right?
Yeah, I'm a big Action Park guy. I love everything about them. Anybody that hasn't watched this documentary has to watch it. And then when you watch it, you're going to regret the fact that you didn't go to this park. You know, we do have a bunch of callers waiting on hold. I want to get to them. Dan, you want to take the first call there?
Yeah, we're going to go to the Tucci Lumber Hotline, line 2, 586 number.
Hey, Rob, we're going to try to get this guy. Who's there?
Rich.
Rich, what's up, buddy? What can we do for you?
How you doing? Calling from Michigan here, man. What an epic phone call you guys had there with Ernie. It was fantastic. I wish you could have heard the whole thing, but my lunchtime is almost over, man, but I want to talk to you guys about some American League wild card. Who do you think is going to come out of the American League?
Well, 2 weeks ago, I picked Baltimore, and I know they're 2 back now. I'm sticking with them. My co-host, Mike, I believe you said you were going to get on the Yankee bandwagon. Was that right?
Yeah, the Yankee hater. I just knew that it was going to come about that the Yankees were going to make this run. But thank God for the Boston Red Sox, who twice put the nail on the coffin. He tried to put the nail on the coffin the first time, but nobody wanted to take the reins. And they did it. I'm like, okay, we'll just go out and sleep on another weekend.
Absolutely. So we're here with Baltimore and New York. You're out there in Michigan. You think you're a Tigers fan?
Oh, diehard.
Yeah. Who do you like? You like Cleveland? Half game back, whatever it is they are now? You like the Indians to take the wild card?
Do you like them? I'd really like to see the Yankees make it, because nothing tickles me more than to see the Yankees lose to the Tigers. So.
I think most sports fans say that. What's that?
Yeah. I said, I would love to just see them make it, just so the Tigers can face them and beat them again.
Yeah, I think that's dangerous poison to play with, though. You know what I mean? You sometimes got to look out, watch out what you're hoping for. You know what I mean? The Yankees get in, ultimately put a beating on the Tigers, and you're sick to your stomach. You can't go to work for 3 days.
Well, I hope for it to last 2 times, and my wish came true. So that's like my World Series to me, beating the Yankees. So.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, I know in most sports it's kind of like that. You want to crack at the Celtics or the Canadians or the Cowboys or whoever it is, the Steelers, you know, you want that crack at somebody. If you had to make a pick right now, who would you take for the wild card spot?
Who would I take for the wild card? Cleveland just on a run, and Terry Francona's got the boys playing well, so I don't know. I'm liking Baltimore, though, Mike.
Hey, this is a man after my own heart, Mike.
This is like an all Dan Santarelli show. Ernie Banks calls in and says we should build a statue of the guy, and then we got a caller from Michigan who wants to agree with Dan Santarelli. It's like I'm rubbing two sticks to go over here to try to get a fan. Everybody wants to crap on my foot.
I got one, guys. My lunch is over.
Hey, I really appreciate the call, Rich. I'll call back anytime, buddy.
Yeah, I'll try and get you guys next week.
All right,
it's Rich from Michigan. We're going to go out to Southern California on line three. Not sure who this is. You're on with the Tri-State Sports Guys. Who's this?
This is Zeke.
Hey, Zeke. How we doing, brother?
Good. I heard about Ernie Banks.
This is the host of the Lost show on the show about Lost. Now, Dan, I don't know if you're a big Lost fan. Me and Tony are huge Lost fans. And Zeke is a member of the NDB Media family, and he's got a great show. He's got former cast members on, and they talk about Lost and break down all the shows. So how's that show going, Zeke?
It's going well. We had Andrew Gabriel on, actress Andrew Gabriel, played Nadia. We had Mark Ormaner, who wrote one of the All Lost books. And I just, a few minutes ago, booked Jorge Garcia's girlfriend, Bethany Shady.
Wow. I mean, how are you getting these guests? Are they just attracted to the show? I mean, clearly it's got – I mean, I've seen the numbers. You guys are doing great numbers-wise. It's fantastic, buddy.
It's just – it's been years now that I've been doing this. I've been working on Bethany for, like, a long time, and she's finally caved in.
All right, you got some sports stuff for us, Zeke, or what?
Well, I got two things. Earlier you were talking about Action Park, which I've been
to. Yeah.
And you lived to tell about it. Yeah, I actually did get injured. I was on the Alpine Slide, I think they call it.
Yeah.
Yep. And I was staying on it pretty good, and then all of a sudden the wheels started coming off the ride. So I put my hand out and to grab, you know, one of the sections, but I thought I was catching it in the middle of the section. I caught it where the sections tear apart, and I opened up the palm of my hand with it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So when was this, like late 80s? I mean, when was this?
Yeah.
How old were you?
Oh, that was a long time ago. Jeez. There's a sports story to this, though, too. That's funny.
All right.
We were supposed to get back, I think it was Saturday, and then I was supposed to play softball on Sunday. And I didn't go expecting to play. I didn't dress up or anything. And we were short a man, so we went a forfeit. So they stuck me out in right field. And I got up to bat, and I'm like, how the hell am I going to do this with one hand? And I ended up going, like, 3 for 3 with a walk and a double. I said, I should do this more often. The players on the other team thought I was doing it on purpose to show them up. I was like, no, look.
I got stitches.
Look. And he's like, fuck you.
Yeah, you're that guy. I mean, we got a lot of those guys in Norwalk. Softball's huge here. My co-host Dan probably used to be one of those guys. The jerk that wants to show the tights up. And we got Zeke out there with one hand going in 3 hits.
And I also bought Grand Theft Auto 5.
Yeah, how is that? Is it the preview, it's like a trailer for, you know, the next Matrix.
They all do that. I hate that. You don't really see what the game is. I had Grand Theft Auto 4, which graphically was amazing. And then this one is also graphically amazing. It's a little different, but the thing is the gameplay is just wide open this time. I mean, you can do anything, and they got not a submarine, but a what's the things that send down like the Titanic? Those little
like those little units, you know, where they go down unmanned units and all. Yeah,
yeah, they've got those. They've got all sorts of planes, jets, all cars, bicycles, everything. You can buy
Tony D is our video game guy, and shockingly, he's not here tonight. He called out at about 7:30 for our 8 o'clock show. I have a hunch he's playing GTA 5 right now. That's like...
Once you get going, you can't stop. I'm up all day, all night.
I got to see, I want to see, like, the economy. Like, you know, they talk about how much money people lose during March Madness because their employees are following games. I bet you when you get a release on a game like this, I mean, the economy just tanks. I mean, the production you're getting at your office right now, thanks to GTA 5, it's just down in the dumps.
Yep.
All right, Zeke. Well, I appreciate the story. I mean, we got an Action Park survivor on the call, on the line here, which is fantastic. I appreciate it. We're going to post a link. Did you see the documentary on Action Park, by the way?
No. Where did I get it? Is it YouTube or?
It's on dailymotion.com. They helped produce it, and we're going to post it on our site after the show, so you'll be able to check it out. It's in two parts.
Oh,
it's fantastic.
I got to check that out. And then when you're done, I got to replay to hear Ernie Banks. I missed that just by a few minutes.
Yeah, Ernie was unbelievable. Well, I could have talked to Ernie Banks for about 20 hours. We can talk to him until, you know, next baseball season. That's how great he was. So, but Zeke, thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate it. Obviously, you're welcome anytime. And plug your show one more time for the Lost Show.
It's Lost Rewatch. It's on Saturdays at 10 p.m. Eastern. You can call into the are you guys on which channel are you on? Sports Channel?
One is Media 2, yeah.
Okay. You can call 914-338-0314, Saturday night at 10. We're rewatching Lost because a year from now they're having a huge reunion in Hawaii for Lost. And there might be some actors and whoever coming there too.
Nice. Yeah, I see. I'm actually, I follow that on Facebook. Not that I'm a, you know, I like to pretend I'm a cool guy. I'm a huge nerd. So I follow that on Facebook too. So that's pretty awesome, Zeke.
Okay. I guess that's it.
All right. That's Zeke calling in. Check out his show every Saturday. It's fantastic. We do got to get to a commercial break. We're way late on a commercial break. We'll be back. We got some duty serious. We got our picks coming up. We'll be right back with the Tri-State Sports guys. Thanks.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Mr. Really, Really, Really Bad Dancer.
Arms swinging, knees bending, head bobbing to no particular rhythm. You're either dancing or you have fleas.
Call me the doctor.
As soon as you hit the dance floor, the taunts begin. Is that all you got, playa? Unfortunately, yes, that's all you got.
Pour it on now.
Who's in the house? Some guy who can't dance. That's who's in the house.
You're a doctor.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Happy Feet, because you really put the oogie in boogie.
Mr. Really.
We're back with the Tri-State Sports guys. Number to call is always 347-637-2306. Probably going to head into some bonus time at some point, but I will let you know. I don't know how to extend it live, so if you lose it at the end of the show, you're going to download it right afterwards. It'll be up on tristatesportsguys.com. We do got to get over to the Hoboken studio and check in with Neil Lynch with his famous, at this point, it's world-renowned segment. Dude, are you serious? Neil, you got some goodies for us tonight or what?
Yeah, I got a handful of stories that might just put a little kick in your step. Next time you go to work, you have something to talk about around the water cooler. Speaking of water cooler, it's better than what this Boise State player drinks during the games. I don't know if you caught this on, I don't even know what day it was, if it was Saturday or not, but what's his name? Jay Ajayi? Probably butchering that, but he drinks pickle juice during the game,
yep.
And you think, okay, well, maybe he has it in like a incognito Gatorade bottle, or he snuck it into like a tin, or you know, trying to keep it on the down low. Now this dude has a full on giant pickle of jars with pickles in it, and he just downs it on the sideline.
Yeah, you know, Neil, I did see that. And I'll tell you, the most striking thing for me was the fact that this dude didn't, like, pour himself a glass of pickle juice. You know what I mean? He didn't get, like, a nice martini glass, a couple of olives. He just drank out of, like, a 10-gallon plastic jug straight pickle juice. And the dudes on ESPN were trying to tell me that it has, like, benefits for your health. I never heard that before. And, you know, far be it for me to say this, because they got the blue curve up there, so I guess they're ahead of the bell curve. But maybe this is the new fad. I don't know. I never heard of that before. Usually I just see guys drinking Gatorade or Pedialyte or a bottle of Poland Spring water or something. But this guy's drinking pickle juice out of a jug. A jug. It held 50 pickles in it.
I mean, I'm all for this, and I love getting weird, and I love weird stuff on the sidelines. So I'm even if it doesn't even have any benefits to your health, I think that he needs to continue to do it, and I'd like to see it get weirder. I think we need to see players do more of this on the sidelines. You know, if not to entertain the masses, you know, I mean, the guy did score 2 touchdowns during the fourth quarter, so you know, I primarily when I was in college, I was a pitcher. And most pitchers know that if you have a blister on your throwing fingers, that you just dip it in the pickle juice there, and it actually increases the healing time. So maybe this guy's got some like internal blisters to work out or something like that. I mean, it's going to sweep the nation for sure. I don't know how this doesn't become like I don't know how Gatorade doesn't sweep in and just absolutely market the hell out of it, and we're all drinking pickle juice in a year.
Yeah, I mean, look, 10 years ago, Neil, nobody knew what pomegranate juice was. Now everything's got pomegranate in it. 5 years ago, nobody knew what coconut water is. Now you can't go up 3 feet down the street without somebody drinking coconut water. It would not shock me that this comes out, maybe in some sort of juice box container. My daughter's a huge pickle fan, too. She would crush a glass of pickle juice right now if I gave it to her. Crush it.
Yeah, and like, you know, Snooki on the Jersey Shore, she's a big fan of pickles, and we all see how she turned out. She's got a lovely fiance and a baby now, and she's looking fit. So, I mean, you know, viva la pickle, I guess. It's got to be better than Jag juice. I don't know if you saw this at all. Guy from, I think it was FSU, tweeted it out. It's a picture of... you know, you go to 7-Eleven, you get a Slurpee, you get a Slushy, what have you. There's apparently a local convenience store in Florida called Kangaroo. I don't know if that's true or not, but they're carrying Jag juice. There's no indication of any kind of flavor. It just says Jag juice. Now, you know, I like to think of myself as an open-minded guy. I like to experiment here and there. I have my borders and my lines, but they're a little bit blurrier than some. I'm going to try the Jag juice just because I'm weird and I have a death wish, but are you guys going to try Jag juice if it makes its way up north?
No, I'm not trying that, and I'm not going on the rides at Action Park. Those are two things. I want to know what I'm drinking. What am I ingesting? What is in it? You know, I'm a big guy, but I'm picky.
I'll tell you what it is. It's Jack Daniels, and it's gigantic jugs. Like it's like,
I'm it.
To get the Slurpee. You get the Jumbo Tron over here. But drink that,
Neil? What's that?
I'm not drinking that. You're going to drink that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I was the kid at lunch where people would just put all kinds, whatever they could find that people hadn't eaten or drank yet, they just put that into a container, and I pound it. And not even for money, just for the pure pride and respect I get from others. So Jag juice ain't no thing.
I think you should drink the Jag juice and go down that ride at Action Park where everybody gets mangled. Because to me, they're both crazy. One brings your life in danger, and the other one's called Jag juice. I mean, think of all the things they could have called it, like nameless juice that wouldn't be as creepy as Jag. If you start thinking about the word Jag, you start thinking weird thoughts. That's all I'm saying. I don't want to think anything like that.
Well, speaking of things that we think of when you say the word Jag, I read this on Barstool. Apparently men with smaller testicles tend to be better fathers than guys with larger testicles. Your thoughts, Mike DePalma, father of two.
Mike DePalma is presently doing something, but I want to talk about for a moment the fact that you say the word testicles as though it's a Greek god. Now, I've never heard it pronounced that way. Why is it? Like Hercules and his brother Testicles. What are we doing here with that?
Well, for me, I think it kind of it brings it really gives that part of the anatomy, you know, its due, right? Because for years and years, we've kind of looked down on it. It's been the punchline of many jokes. It's been a punching bag, pun intended, for a lot of people. So I feel like we gotta bring it up and give it its due and really, you know, make sure that people understand the significance of that body part. But I was curious.
Neil, it's Mike. I'm back. I'm sorry. I had to leave the studio to nature was calling, and so I'm back. The one time I leave the studio, I mean, everybody hears my fat mouth talking all day. At one time I leave the studio, you have some question for me. So I missed it. What was the question, buddy?
Well, I was just read an article. There's a study that has been revealed. The results have been presented, and they said that men with smaller testicles tend to be better fathers than men with larger testicles. And since you're a father of two, I thought you might want to defend yourself.
Well, how are you supposed to defend yourself? You're either saying you're a terrible father or you've got little balls. So, I mean, it's really, I'm going to go with I'm a great father. If anybody wants to come test out my manhood, you come down to the Perry Avenue Bar and Grill and you test it out yourself. That study. Hey, they can come call me for a study. The number to call is 347-637-2306. I'll do it on air if they want me to. But I'm a fantastic father.
Yeah, and you know, I'm proud of you. I'm really glad that you were able to take a stand and you know, be honest and be real with our listeners. So I am not a father, ladies, so I'm just putting that out there. I think that I'd be a horrible father, so just keep that in your back pocket.
I'll tell you what, though. My daughters love Uncle Neil, though. They love to see you. They miss your shiny face in the Perry Avenue studio.
Yeah, if you make the younger ladies go nuts, pun intended. Here's a story about a Texas man who has a rare condition where he gets drunk from eating food.
The cheapest date ever. Why can't we? I mean, when I was in college, how come I couldn't meet this in the female form?
Yeah, and I mean, oh my God. I mean, I've been eating a lot lately, so you could say that I'm on a bit of a bender if I were this guy. But yeah, I mean, if there's ever a reason to really just forget about any kind of diet plan you had for the new year, I get drunk when I eat. I mean, supermodels don't have to worry about it, so they're in the clear. But, I mean, can you imagine if you're Joey Chestnut or Kobayashi, you would die on the stage?
I'm calling BS on this whole story, dude. There's no way. I mean, the reaction, I mean, I'm no scientist, right? But there's no way the reaction going on in your brain is the same reaction of all foods. It doesn't make any sense, dude. I'm calling BS on this whole story. And I called BS on that twerking video a week before Jimmy Kimmel came out. When that lady caught on fire, I told Tony D when he posted, I said, that's fake. I'm calling fake on this story, too, the whole thing. Get the doctor on the line, 347-637-2306. I want to have that doctor on the line.
So they decided to isolate this guy in a hospital room because they figured he's a closet drinker, he's a liar, he's, you know, obviously an alcoholic, he doesn't know how to contain himself. And so they isolated him in the hospital room for a full 24 hours. He ate carbohydrate foods and ended up with a blood alcohol concentration of 0.12%, which you can't drive with that kind of back, at least in New York and NJ. So apparently the dude's belly can brew booze. This guy's gut is also a keg.
I'll tell you what. You know those, like, scummy lawyers that are always on TV and they have, like, vans that drive around the city? Like, you know, you got a DUI, call this horrible person. That's going to be a way that some lawyer is going to take a hold of that and say, look, my client wasn't at the pub until 3 in the morning drinking Jack Rocks. No, 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 no. He was eating Grinders at some deli somewhere, and that's why he passed it and proved me otherwise. And that's what it's going to be. So some scumbag's going to profit off of this finding.
I mean, where was this defense when I got pulled over? I mean, you know, it's coming from a pasta dinner. What do you want to do?
I know. You're over there paying $25 a month for the rest of your life to pay that fine off. I know your story.
Well, I might have bad luck, but did you hear the story about the guy who he was evicted from his home for the 1964 Olympics. He is now being evicted again for the 2020 Olympics.
Evicted already? What are they building there, dude? What kind of construction plan where they got a 7-year lead time? I work in construction. What are you building where they need to evict the guy right now?
I mean, just move, right, dude? I mean, just like, you know, sail the white flag and be like, you know, location, location, location. I mean, you got to find a better spot than that. I mean, it's in Tokyo, the Summer Olympics of 2020. The dude was 30 years old when the 64 Olympics rolled around. So he's going to be, what, 102 by the time 2020 comes?
God bless him if he makes it there. Let him kick it out. I would lay right on whatever athletic field they're building right there. I'd lay right there in the middle of it. I'm 102 years old. This is my place. That's how I go.
You know what I find interesting, though? Is all these countries, and you're the political guy, but Japan, England, all these places with their socialized medicine, whatever they do, they have all these things going on. They look down on the Americans. They kick guys out of their home for the Olympics.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about that. I mean, you kick somebody out because you're having the Olympics there, so somebody gets evicted for that. Twice.
Yeah. I mean, look, tell me I'm wrong. In the construction world, eminent domain is a big thing. I don't want to get all technical on it, but obviously, if I know the eminent domain is typically used for school or a hospital or something, used for the greater good. The idea that the Olympics, typically they don't even make money. It's not like this is this big boom to the economy. This idea that you're taking somebody out for the Olympics is insane. Imagine wherever you live, Neil, some beautiful place in Hoboken. I'm sure you got some nice, place with 17 roommates, whatever you guys do in Broboken. But imagine them kicking you out because they just decided to have a little satellite place in Hoboken. I mean, imagine that. I mean, they would never happen in Darien because the power you guys have in Darien.
Yeah.
The amount of money you'd have to spend in eminent domain, I mean, you probably, your house alone would bankrupt the IOC.
I'm standing in an O'Neill softball jersey doing the show, and you're talking about how fucking I am. I don't want to hear any of that. But I do know this. In 96 in Atlanta, did anybody get evicted? One of the bums, right?
Yeah, right. You're right.
Mark Lemke was still running around on there. I mean, the ambulance takes nobody moved. That's all I'm saying.
I bet you didn't know you were going to get into this political talk and do it to you seriously, Neil. But that's why you asked the thought-provoking question about, you know, getting drunk by eating food and, you know, testicles and how they rate as you're being a father.
I got one more, but I want to leave you with this quote from this dude. You know, he says, I don't want to see the Olympics at all. Deep inside, I have a kind of grudge against the Olympics. Probably I might go where you cannot set up a tobacco shop because that's where he is. He's a purveyor of a tobacco shop. He said, probably I may go where you cannot set up a tobacco shop. That means I will lose my reason for living. This dude lives for tobacco, y'all, and you're taking away his reason for living. I mean, that's just that is heartbreaking.
We got to get him in contact with Leaping Lanny Poffo because he is so anti-tobacco. Maybe we could set up some sort of like old school 1994 total phone call between us, the genius Lanny Poffo, and this guy who's getting evicted from his tobacco shop, and just let that be an intervention. I mean, according to Lanny Poffo, if you smoke cigarettes in high school, you're basically a mass murderer, is basically what he said on the air last week. But again, Neil, a fantastic Do To You Serious segment. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to go to our favorite ad. I mean, our biggest sponsor, you know it. We know it. Doug Roberts, Ragnarok Rising. If you haven't bought the book yet, you're really missing out. We're going to go to that ad. We're going to come back. We're going to give our picks. You'll probably lose us if you're listening live, but you could always download us at tristatesportsguys.com. Follow us at Twitter, which is at @tristate_sports, or check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/tristatesportsguys. We'll be right back.
Surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, from what we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. If anyone out there.
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.weebly.com.
All right, we're back. The Tri-State Sports Guys. If you haven't bought the book, please go buy the book, Ragnarok Rising. It's the best book around. We're going to get to our picks now. We've converted our 5 and 10 segments to our 5 and 10 picks. Neil, you made us look a little stupid because we really bashed you for your A&M pick. Now, I don't want to make excuses. I know they scored a meaningless touchdown with 15 seconds left. You look, the money. You're the one with the money in your pocket, and me and Danny over here are passing the hat around to pay for lunch money. But you got that one right, so I will admit when I'm wrong on that one. We've been laying out some pretty good picks there. If you're following us, I'm 6-4 at this point. You're betting with us, you're winning. So we're going to go through our teams. Now, Tony's not here, but we typically do our four favorite teams and then one bonus. This week, the Jets happen to play the Bills, so we're going to start with that one. The Jets are home against the Bills. I was very tempted to go to this game. I told everybody I gave up my season tickets, but shockingly, it's not very difficult to score some Jets-Bills tickets, so I probably could have got them if I wanted them. This game opened at Jets laying 2 points. It's currently in the post at 2.5. I'll be honest. I think the Bills win this game. I know I'm over here. I bet against the Jets the week one, and they made me look stupid. I took them last week because the points were too much. But I think when you look at the two quarterbacks, we didn't go into breaking down this week's Jets game, but I think the Geno Smith we saw last week is the more realistic Geno Smith than what we saw in the week one. And so I thought E.J. Manuel showed you some things. I think they have too many weapons on offense in compared to what the Jets can do. I do like the Jets' defense. I do like, the over-under here is 39. So it's tempting to take the over there, but I'd be very hesitant because I don't think the Jets are going to put up more than maybe, 25 points, 24, 27 points the rest of any game this season. And so, they're going to be in the low teens. I like the Bills in this game, taking the 2.5. I see a 17-14 style game with Geno Smith making some mistakes. They can't get the running game going. And it's almost like they just abandoned it because there are times when it looks like Bilal Powell could be an actual NFL running back. And Mortiweg, who I like because I think the offense looks a little crisper than it has in the past, he just abandons it at weird times, which is the criticism of his in Philadelphia. And so they're not going to get that going with a rookie quarterback and their lack of weapons on offense. I think that the Bills are going to win this game. Neil, where do you got this game going? 2.5 points going to the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on all points. I mean, E.J. Manuel looks like the real deal. Geno continues to – he's not horrible, but he's making kind of the similar mistakes that Sanchez is making. And, unless the Jets can really just – ground and pound it and I think the Bills are the most sacks in the league. I think that's what Tony was bragging about over the weekend. So if they can just run the ball and hopefully get some success off the play action, they might have a shot, but I really don't see that happening. I think Buffalo wins it outright.
Yeah, you see, I'm looking at the spread and to me, it's almost like they're dying through the pitch of Bills. It just seems like that's what they're looking for. And whenever I see something like that, my mind tells me, you got to lay the timber. And I feel like if the Jets can't win 20-17 or something at home against Buffalo, then there's no point in probably playing their fourth game in the season. So I'm going to lay the points with the Jets. I'll probably be in here next Wednesday, God willing, and telling you how, Buffalo beat them 28-10, and I'm an idiot. But I'm going to take the Jets and lay the wood.
All right. I mean, I hope you're right, dude. I'll be pulling for them, obviously, but I don't see them winning this game. I think the Bills, they've looked good in their first 2 weeks. I bet against them last week against Carolina, and they wound up covering there. I'll go out to Vikingsville here. Now, the Vikings have lost a couple of heartbreakers, Danny, which I'm sure you're just thrilled about.
Yeah.
If you're a Vikings fan, I think that they took the line off because of the trade that took place that we announced earlier today. In the post right now, it's 5.5 points for the Browns. But I think that after the trade of Trent Richardson, when I checked Bovada right before the show, the line was off. You couldn't bet on it. So it's going to shift a little bit, but I mean, for the sake of this show, we got to go with what the post has listed at 5.5. I like the Vikings. I'll take the Vikings. I think the Vikings are a team that, you know, they can't win, but I think they're a team that can cover. I think that this is another, I mean, you look at the Browns right now, if you're in that locker room and they just trade away their feature back and they sign Willis McGahee and you're looking at a first round pick next year and you're saying to yourself, it's got to be really hard to motivate yourself if you're in that locker room. So I like the Vikings doing outright here. I actually like them to be to be like a comfortable win, a nice 28-14 win, that type of thing. That's where I see this game going. Neil, if the line, I have no idea where the line will wind up. I'm sure it'll be much less than 5.5. But if you were to take the line, if you were to bet this game before the trade, and you're getting the 5.5 points as a spread, who do you got here in the Vikings game?
Vikings 100%. Yeah, the Browns are in shambles.
Just breaking it down, I like that. You know, that was very simple and concise. Danny, what do you got?
I mean, no need to get more in depth than that, dude. I mean, like, you know, Vikings are going to crush.
Look, I went against the Vikes last week, and the Bears, just the mention of the Bears gives me tummy aches, and I still took them, and the Vikes lose the heartbreaker, like Mike said. I'm going to lay it with the Vikings at 5.5. I personally think, I don't know if you just misspoke, I think the line will go up.
Of course. The line will go up for the Vikings. They're laying the 5.5.
And I think if you get to a situation where it goes to something like 7, 7.5, it becomes really difficult to take the Vikings. But to me, clearly, Ponder's awful. I just have no patience for the guy. He seems like a nice guy, whatever. The defense has been completely just disappointing, where I thought it would be a pretty good defense this year. I know it's only 2 games in, but the Browns, like Neil said, are a debacle. The whole city of Cleveland, like, they don't have anybody that wins anything. If the Vikings can't cover 5.5, the spread we're going with at home, then you're in for a much longer season than what I think it's going to be. So, but I'm going to lay the points. Probably be sick about that one too, but that's what I'm doing.
I think that's a universal bet. I mean, again, the line's going to be much different. It's probably going to be over a touchdown by the time kickoff occurs. Now, we're going to go, we're going to look in the Giantsville here. You know, they're in Carolina, and the spreads open up at 2.5. It's come down to 1.5. I think that everyone I'm talking to is taking the Giants, which gives me some trepidation here, but I'm very confident in the Giants. Just look, you got to go with what you've seen over the last, you know, I don't know, 8 or so years with the Giants, 8-10 years. You know, I don't know if they're a playoff team this year. I didn't pick them to make the playoffs, but I don't think they're a team that's going to fall apart completely. And a loss here starts to unravel the Giants. And, you know, it's a must-win for both teams. The coach out there in Carolina really needs to start looking at his job security if they start out 0-3 and losing at home here. But I like the Giants here to win. You know, I think finally they put things together. I think you are going to see the running game come back a little bit here, even though it's been non-existent a little bit. I think David Wilson gets the touches back. Maybe it was a one-game thing from Coughlin. He's going to want to dazzle some people. And I think that the Giants win this game pretty comfortably. Neil, where do you see this game going with the Giants getting 1.5 at Carolina?
You know, I mean, as a fan, you know, I want to see them win. And I think that, you know, given the caliber of opponents that they've played in the first 2 games, that they should be able to win. It's just a matter of, you know, keeping the ball out of the opponent's hands. And, you know, they have been able to prove that. I will say this. I don't think that Eli, in his career, has had a 3-game awful stretch. You know, and you know, say what you will with the first game, because he was able to kind of bring them within contention. But I cannot see this funk going on for another game. I don't care where the running game's at. You know, he has the ability to shake it off, and that's what his teammates, you know, applaud him for, his demeanor and his even keel. So I think, you know, Jacobs probably won't see the ball as much as he did last week and will probably primarily be used for short yardage and pass blocking. I think Wilson, you know, someone had to come to Wilson after that game last week and say, dude, get out of your head and just run with the ball. and, you know, there's one or two fixes we can do. We'll do drills all week, but just it's muscle memory, my man. And the one muscle you can't use when it comes to memory is your brain. So just get out of your head, and they'll be all right. I feel bad for the Panthers, though. 0-3, and they're not a bad team. So, yeah, that's a long way of saying Giants.
Yeah, I'm going to take the short way of saying Giants, and I'm going to base it on the fact that I can't in my mind picture them being 0-3. You know, I was high on them, and I know I said it earlier this year when they opened with Dallas, that I said I would bet them on the money line and end up losing on the field. But this is really a game that I believe it's a point and a half. I don't know how much you'll get on a money line. It could be like, you know, 110, something along those lines. But I would take the Giants. I am not a fan of the team, but I like Eli Manning, and I just cannot see any way. All the shortcomings you guys pointed out, all the things going on, I just can't see any way that they are 0-3 come Sunday evening. I have a tough time wrapping my head around that. So I'm going to take the Giants and the point and a half. I'm thinking they're going to win on the field.
Well, because we all like the Giants there, which means probably the smart money's on Carolina. Now, we have two wild card games this week because of the Jets are playing the Bills. We're going to go with our first one here. I'm going to stick with the NFL. And let me just double check with the post as this game app. But I like the Atlanta Falcons in this game. I do think the Dolphins going into this season are going to be solid, and they are. But I think the Falcons, the fact that they're getting a point, according to the post, regardless of them being in Miami, let's not make Miami, a place to play like it's Seattle. They have a tough time filling the stadium just like the Jets do. And so it's obviously a short little trip from Atlanta to Miami. We're not talking about going across the country here. And talent-wise, I know Roddy White's a little banged up, but I like the Falcons here to win, obviously win outright. I think that they win that game and really start getting the ball rolling. I think that little competition they're going to have in the NFC West South between New Orleans and the Falcons is going to be good. And I don't think the Falcons want to drop a game to the Dolphins, lose a game to the AFC East team other than the Pats. I don't think that's going to happen. So I like the Falcons here getting the 1 point. Take that. Neil, who do you got as a wild card pick here for this week?
So you want me to do Falcons-Dolphins or do you want me to do something else?
Do whatever you want to do, buddy. If you got the lines in front of you, if you want to take a look, you want me to send it over to Dan, we can do whatever you want, brother.
All right, Raiders-Broncos. Let's go Monday night. The line that I'm looking at is 15, and I'm going to take the Raiders. You know, I think Terrell Pryor surprises some people. And, I obviously their defense is not getting any accolades or awards this year, but, I think that even if it's in Denver, you know, Broncos are going to put up some points, but I kind of have some faith in Pryor. I think that he's going to at least put on a show and at least keep it within 15.
Yeah, you know, that is a tempting game to take because if you watch the Broncos' first two games, they kind of scuffled in the first half and then opened the game up in the second half. And I think that as good as Welker's been, if you look at him numbers-wise, clearly he's not on the same page. If you watch last week's game with Peyton Manning, as he needs to be, and there's a lot of, you know, he had a couple drops, he had a couple reads that I thought him and Manning were on the same page. I could see them kind of scuffling early, even though it's out in Denver. The Raiders doing some unique things, maybe. I like that game. I like the Broncos to win, but I don't mind that pick. That's an interesting pick. I like that, Neil. Danny, what do you got?
I'm going to switch over to college football. And
of course you are.
Yeah. And I'm going to take the Michigan Wolverines at UConn, laying 17.5. And I don't know how many people out there listening watched any of that Michigan-Akron game on Saturday, but it was an abysmal effort by the Wolverines. They looked terrible. Devin Gardner looked out of his skin at certain times. Like, the defense just looked shaky, everything about it. Brady Hoke was disgusted by the effort. They needed a goal line stand to beat the Akron Zips by 4, I think it was. I just feel like UConn is not a very good team this year. They struggled with Towson and lost to a 1AA school. I got to feel like Hope's got those kids ready. I know UConn, all of Connecticut seems to be excited about the mighty Michigan Wolverines coming to town. I like Michigan to win by at least 3 touchdowns, if not 4. And that's going to be my first wild card pick, is taking Michigan at UConn lane 17.5.
Yeah, I like that pick a lot, too. I mean, we got a lot of UConn fans that are fans of the Tri-State Sports Guys. A lot of people that are heading up there to check out that game.
I mean, UConn looks just atrocious. And the idea that they're going to be able to play a real football team, and you could say what you want about the fact that Michigan struggled against Akron, that's going to be a laugher. It's not even going to be a watchable game, I don't think. If you're there, it's going to be fun. That's cool. UConn's a party school, all that. That's going to be a joke of a game. Now, my second wild card game that I want to take, it's interesting. So we mentioned before, after the Trent Richardson trade, they took the Vikings-Browns line off. It was sitting at 5.5 before the trade. They took it offline. The Bovada still has the ability to take the spread didn't change. San Francisco is laying 10 points at home against the Colts. I think that a lot of people are going to flood towards taking the Colts here, thinking Trent Richardson as a midweek pickup is going to be this big thing. Maybe he does pan out and could be a real impactful player for the Colts, but I don't think so. I think that San Francisco 49ers win this game handily at home after that embarrassing loss there. I would lay the 10 points in a heartbeat. I don't care who they have at running back. I think that the Niners just stifle any kind of running game. I don't care who's back there. The Colts are going to throw at them, and they're going to confuse Andrew Luck. And I think that game is the blowout that we saw Sunday night is going to be the same type of thing on the flip side out there in San Francisco. I don't know. Neil, you got another game you want to give us?
Yeah, I was looking at the Rams Cowboys game.
Very interesting game. That's a tough game to pick. That's why the balls of you. That's why you're not going to be a good father, because you got the balls to pick this game. According to your study, you're not going to be a good dad. Good thing you're keeping it in your pants, brother.
Cowboys by 3.5, and I think the Rams put up a good fight, and they lose by a field goal. I think that's how it's going to play out. I think Bradford is coming into his own. They have Daryl Richardson now, who appears to be like he's going to get a lot of touches. A couple of they have Tavon Austin, Chris Givens, and that Rams defense can be tricky sometimes. They can be staunch when they want to. So it might be, I know it's in Dallas, but I just smell a letdown from Dallas, and I feel like if anything, that they'll pull it out, but it's going to be a tight one.
Yeah, I hear you, buddy. And I'm going to go with my last pick. I'm going to head back to the college gridiron. I'm going to go with a bit of a weird one. I'm going to take the Idaho Vandals plus 31.5 against Washington State. And the reason for that is...
Let me just jump in and say, that's the best line that's ever been uttered on this show. The Idaho Vandals.
Yep.
Like, what, 31?
They're getting 31.5.
I'm sorry. They're receiving 31 against who?
Washington State.
And you love it?
Love it. And I'm going to tell you why I love it. For anybody out there that's out in the Pacific Northwest listening, people go gaga for Mike Leach, okay? The head coach of the Washington State Cougars. From his days at Texas Tech when he was locking kids in closets and doing whatever he was doing. This guy is the mad scientist. He's a brilliant guy. They beat USC in L.A., Lane Kiffin's the worst coach in the history of the game of college football. And this team scored 10 points. And people made it about how good Washington State was. The real takeaway from that is how awful SC is. They're terrible. It's a terrible football team. He's the worst coach ever. Idaho goes in there. At worst, they lose 40-26. At worst, 40-14. That's 26 points.
Yeah.
This is put your kids through college type money you can put on this game. Lock up the Vandals in Pullman getting 31.5.
And again, that's not just the first time on this show. It's probably the first time in sports talk history somebody says lock up the Vandals.
Absolutely.
I'm doing it. I'm betting. I promise you. I'm betting real money. I'm not talking about just throwing it into some sort of parlay. I'm betting real money on Idaho this week. On you. I have faith in Dan Santarella. I don't care about any of your picks. Neil's wildcard picks were horrible.
Yeah.
I like your picks. I'm putting it down.
And you know what? When your daughters head off to Yale and Harvard on this dime that you put down on this game, you will thank me 20-some-odd years from now. You will thank me.
That's it. You're into Biff Tannen.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's the end of our show. Check us out, as always, tristatesportsguys.com. Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys or at @TriState_sports. Thank you again to Seth Borges. I was nervous I was saying his name wrong, Neil, but I nailed it, right?
You nailed it.
Nailed it. We had Ernie Banks on. I don't know if you caught that. You ever heard of Ernie Banks? It's a pretty big deal. He picked us out today on the show. Something you can maybe mention tomorrow. Like, hey, I talked to Ernie Banks last night.
Can I just say how amazing that was, just to put a bow on it? Like I said earlier, everything is downhill for me. I got nothing left, just old age and being an old cripple or something, and I'll be able to tell people I interviewed Ernie Banks all the time. That was awesome. I'm so appreciative of Mr. Banks. That was great.
He didn't interview him. The guy wanted a shrine of Dan Santarella outside the studio.
Something wrong with it? There's nothing wrong with that. I can say that. Perry Avenue looks a little empty out there. We could put something up.
Get a Danny Santarella shrine. I love it. Neil, holding down the Hoboken studio. Your end, I'll tell you what, the production on your end is not the problem. The production on the Perry Avenue studio, we had some problems with the mic. We had some problems with some ads and all that. And you know what? Whatever the team you put together over in Hoboken, it's coming through very strong, Neil. So it's a kudos to you, brother.
Yeah, it's a one-man show, not counting the interns.
Yeah, you got an intern over there, my main man. All right, check us out every week. Next week, we've got a couple good guests lined up. We'll announce them on the site. Check us out every week, 8, 10 o'clock on Wednesday evening, Block Talk Radio. Thank you again to NDB Media. We'll check you out next week. Thanks.